you know, it's so complicated for women in this society because we are socialized as women to worry about more about being perfect than we are to worry about being brave.
Building, running, and selling multi-billion dollar software tech companies is what they do. They are founders, board chairs, and CEOs in the software and technology space leveraging artificial intelligence. They are wives and mothers. They are immigrant daughters. Join us as they share their insights, strategies, experiences, and explore important issues shaping our world. Welcome to the Masterstroke Podcast with Monica Enid and Sejal Petrozak.
Thank you so much, Georgiana. And I'm so excited.
Thanks, Georgiana.
I'm so excited to be here with you, Sejal. When I look at your career, I think it's been amazing. You have climbed the corporate ranks and been part of public companies, private equity-backed companies. You spent 13 years at Active Networks, I know, where you climbed and rose up to be the chief administrative officer. You then were asked to be the CEO of DealerSocket, which Vista Equity had asked you to do that. And I also have to say that in those executive positions and in that career, I find it incredibly impressive that you have won so many awards. In 2019, on the Software Report's list of top SaaS CEOs. And not only were you on this list of a who's who of the very best top SaaS CEOs, you were ranked number 7, which was the highest ranking woman on the list, which is incredible. And I know that after being a CEO and doing that for multiple turns, you decided to take on some board work. You're on 3 boards now, 2 of which you're the executive chair of. And, you know, someday we're going to have to dive into that. What is that executive chair? Because I'm looking forward to hearing about that. But I know that all of those companies are high growth, highly efficient operating companies. And I am sure there's so much to learn from all of the experiences you've had in all those places. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, thanks, Monica. Yeah, this is a really fun thing to do, which is to share some of our insights and so much about our backgrounds to maybe give those who are listening, understanding of what we've been through, because many of them may be going through some of the same things that we went through as they're thinking about their careers. And I'm excited to introduce you, Monica. I've known you for a number of years, and you've had such an incredible career, very different from mine, and yet incredibly successful in a very different way. Graduated from Carnegie Mellon University in engineering, computer engineering, and then you went to work at places like Intel and IBM, and then you gave all of that up from these big companies to start your own company, your own SaaS, which is software as a service company, and incredible successful company where you've had 3 monetizations and over 15 years Zaproved has grown and grown and grown. And you've worked with private equity investors, with angel investors and private equity investors. And you've won a number of awards too, including being the Tech Executive of the Year in Oregon. And it's so special and rare to find, a founder who also is an incredibly successful CEO that can scale their business. And so it's really fun to be here with you, Monica, and you on the very entrepreneurial side, me having never started my own company, having gone through the corporate, even though they were smaller companies in some cases and bigger companies in others, ladder. And now you've sold your company, and so you are doing this podcast with us and sitting on boards, and this is exciting.
We talked about doing a podcast. We didn't spend a lot of time talking about what we wanted to achieve, and I know we'll cover that with our listeners, but we didn't talk a lot about the name, and then our executive producer sent us the show notes, and it said Masterstroke. And I was kind of curious, you know, we had some funny comments about that. What do you think about Masterstroke?
Well, yeah, it's funny. I think you remember I told you that you know, at first when I heard the words masterstroke, I think everyone's going to think of this podcast as one about older people swimming or something like that. But then to be fair, I did look up the definition of what does masterstroke mean, because she wouldn't have sent it to us that way. You know, she didn't think it was a great name for our podcast. And it is an action that is very clever and produces success. Ooh. Yeah, an action that is very clever and produces success. So if you think about you making that very difficult decision and action to start your own company and produce success from there, maybe you can talk a little bit about what it's like to take a risk and like that, and what did you learn from it, and you know, such a big decision. Can you let us know a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny when I hear you talk about a clever action that produced success, I have mixed feelings about it, because I do think there are these pivotal moments where you make decisions and it changes your life forever. And there are definitely moments that I can go back and go, yep, I know exactly when it was. I know where I was. I know what I was wearing. I know exactly what happened. I don't know if men always know what they were wearing, but I do. I remember what I remember the moments. But I also think success is not just the pivotal moments, right? It's about, it comes in the day-to-day habits and the day-to-day work. So I know that you, when I've talked with you about your success, I know you talk a lot about the different habits that you've accumulated over time, which set a discipline for you that have taken you on your journey. So I'm excited to talk about that as well. But yeah, I mean, it was scary to going back to entrepreneurship. It was definitely scary leaving big companies and having a safe job that someone else is paying, worrying about payroll, and deciding to kind of take money all out of your retirement fund and quit your job and not have any income. And then take on employees where you feel like you really do have to think hard about their livelihood and their success, and you feel responsible for them. The truth is, I had been around a lot of entrepreneurs. I had been around a lot of male entrepreneurs and seen them do it. And it had always been something I had admired. I just thought, wow, look at them just out there doing it. And I know that for years, I thought to myself, gosh, they're just so smart and they just know so much. And then, you know, I was working at a startup for a, you know, a really successful CEO who had started his company, raised venture capital from very prestigious top tier venture capitalist, and had prior exit track record. And I thought, wow, he just must know so much. And then I got to be part of his executive team, and I realized it was me that was not right about that. Like, it wasn't that he knew things, but he didn't know everything. But he was figuring it out with the right people, getting the right resources, getting people to join him, having conversations, and figuring out along the way. And I think, like, there was this moment, and I actually remember I got out of the shower, I had a towel in my hair, and I thought to myself, wait a minute, what have I been waiting for all this time? Why do I think there's some moment at which I'm going to be like ready to know everything? That moment is never going to come. And I just either do it or I don't do it. And if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it now. And I kind of just decided. And I actually, still with the towel in my hair, called him and said, you know, my time at this, you know, thank you so much for this opportunity. And I've learned so much, but my time here is over. And I've always told you, I had always told him that someday I was going to start my own company. And I said, I need to start working on that right now. 2 weeks from now, a few weeks from now, but with transition period, but I need to get on that immediately. And boy, it's been so exciting, and I never look back, and I'm so glad I did it.
It's hard to make those big decisions. And it's funny, you remember exactly where you were when you make those big decisions in any big decision in life. And that's, you know, what we're talking about with master strokes, right? It's making those master stroke moments and thinking about those.
And you have a lot of success in corporate America and moving up the ladder. Do you feel like there were masterstroke moments, or do you feel like it was accumulation of lots of little things that you did?
It is a lot of little things, but there are a number that I would say that are the similar aspect. And it's about taking on, similar to you, something that, you know, I would look at a job description and, you know, if I really looked at that job description, I probably should never have applied for that job. Or I would take on a job without really understanding that I couldn't check all the boxes. But, you know, I think if you look too much into those things, rather than just saying, I'm going to learn it, I'm going to do my best and I'll figure it out, you know, that's something. And similar to you, I mean, I was at companies. I never started my own company, but it's still taking that chance and that risk and betting on yourself and saying, yeah, I can do it. I've never done it before, but I can do it. And I think a lot of people don't take those chances and they don't say, I'm going to bet on myself and I know I'm going to learn it as I get into it. And I'm going to work really hard to be able to learn it. And I think, you know, that's probably the biggest thing, you know, and, you know, building those opportunities for yourself.
Yeah.
Not just saying I'm not going to do it because I don't know how to do it.
No. And I think, you know, it's so complicated for women in this society because we are socialized as women to worry about more about being perfect than we are to worry about being brave. And I think, you know, that's something you and I have talked about is, you know, when we can lift up out of that perfection and not worry about the perfection and say, look, we're not going to worry about people can criticize us. Fine. We're not doing everything exactly perfectly, fine. We're going to do it and we're going to be brave and we're going to try anyway.
Tell us the story, and I'm putting you on the spot a little because I know this story, of when you were first raising money you had young kids and you were going through this whole process. Talk a little bit about that and what your experiences were.
Yeah, I was working for another startup and kind of realized it's like now or never. I don't know what I'm waiting for. Transitioned out of that company and then spent a little time exploring and figuring out what is it I wanted to build. You know, it was based on technology around software as a service and where software was going. And I built a prototype and actually was intending to see if I could bootstrap the company. And I don't know, I was pretty naive about what it was going to take to get the company off the ground and was moving along there. And then in 2008, you know, we went to beta with a product called Zapproved in August of 2008. And then in September, Lehman Brothers failed. And, you know, the whole global financial crisis really started. And at that time, if you kind of remember back to that time, we had no idea what was happening and whether, you know, the entire financial system was going to collapse. And so it became very evident to me that like we were going to have to pick one thing, be the best at it. And then we were going to have to make sure that, you know, we really nailed it and were able to communicate it. So we picked a legal application and I decided I have to start raising money because I could not, you know, this was one of those moments where you think, okay, it's really, I had drained all of the savings that I had taken and more. Look, there were so many hard things about starting a company. And I think in the beginning, I really knew I had to use some of my own capital. And my husband is one of the most incredibly supportive human beings. I'm super grateful for him. I can't tell you, I wouldn't be anywhere without him. But we had agreed on a certain amount that we were going to take from our savings and our retirement. And we were going to bet on me and bet on this venture. And a certain amount of time where I was out of work and not getting paid and a certain amount of money. And, you know, after the Great Recession started, the financial crisis in 2008, and it became clear that I was going to need more money, I ended up having to go back to him and basically say, I know we agreed on X, but I need more. And I did that 3 times. And you know,
how was that? I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, first and foremost, for anybody who's listening, I think something Monica said earlier, if you are young enough that you don't have a spouse, finding a fantastically supportive partner is such a key part of success. At least I think so. And it sounds like Monica, you think so as well. And I've been lucky to have that as well. But to go back to your question, still going back to your savings, yeah, you must have been so convicted that this was the idea. How was that? I mean, how do you do that? Go back.
I think you have
three
to.
Times and say, I need more.
Yeah, no, you have to be convicted that like, this is the thing, because you have to convince investors, you have to convince employees, you have to convince as customers that you're going to be successful. And so you do have to kind of really get embrace the like, I am going to get there and that is going to happen. But that's not that there's not, I mean, that doesn't mean that there are moments where I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I stopped working. I took my salary out of our income. Blowing through what we worked so hard, our nest egg that we worked so hard to put away. And also because it was a great financial crisis, the stock market was falling and like some of our savings were.
And you had 2 young kids.
Exactly. That I had not put through college or anything. You know, at that time, you still don't know all your expenses are going to be. And it was critically hard. And while I say, you know, my husband was incredibly supportive, he at one point had to say, like, I know you feel like this, you just need 25K more and 25K more and 25K more. But are you sure that's really right that you just need 25K more? Because maybe you're going to have to solve this some other way. And that's the moment at which I thought, he's right. I have to go out and I have to raise capital and I have to actually fund this company and do it. And that started me on the journey of raising capital, talking to angels, kissing a lot of frogs to find my princes. As a woman in 2008, 2009, raising capital, when I would go to these coffee meetings, because I did have young kids, I realized that 3 out of the 4 times I met with a man, most of the angel investors were men. Actually, I only had 1 female angel investor, 2 actually.
Out of how many do you think, how many meetings do you think
I had easily 200.
Wow.
And, you know, most of the men asked me fairly early in the conversation, who was taking care of my kids? And, you know, there were times that it made me mad. There were times where I would make a joke and say like, oh, was I not supposed to leave them in the car? Like, you know, or just try to kind of blow it off. Like, what a ridiculous question. Like, why are you asking me? Do you ask any men that? You know, I never did that. But it also kind of told me like who was going to see me, the people that didn't ask me those questions and started asking me quickly about the business and what I was doing and what the opportunity was. And that's when I knew like you were the right investor for me. And I was going to invest more time and energy. So in some ways, you know, it was annoying for sure. And something that probably men don't have to deal with, but it really did help me in the end figure out who do I want to partner with and who do I want to be part of this growing company.
How do you handle that?
You mean where, you know, where you...
Well, you don't have the choices to pick someone that didn't ask you those questions.
No, I think it's really hard. And I think when you're being an entrepreneur, you know, you can kind of quickly say, all right, I'm not spending time with these people. I'm going to move on. But I do think... And these might be one of those pivotal moments is the people that you spend time with at work. You know, there's this old adage, like you are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time around. But I actually think like you have to keep high standards for all the people that you're around, because it's not necessarily an average. Like it might actually be the least common denominator of like who you spend time with that can bring you down, because one person who kind of has a negative attitude can bring you down. I know it's happened to me. It's happened in teams that I've been a part of. And so I think it's being really careful, but you're right. There are lots of times where you don't have those choices and you can't curate exactly the list you want. And I think, you know, the important thing there is to sort of role model and be the person that you want everyone and hope that like you're having an influence on those people and calling out behaviors in hopefully the most humorous and delicate and gentle and kind way that you can, but calling out behaviors that are not, I was going to say that are toxic, but are sort of not productive for you or productive for the people around you.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I know you've probably been in a lot of situations where you couldn't curate the group and you had to deal with people. How did you deal with it?
I think a lot of it goes back to just having confidence and knowing that you're good. You're going to work through it. And the people that, and I think it's true, you know, trying not to be around the people that maybe don't understand or don't care to understand diversity and different types of decisions. I remember hearing someone say, it may not work for you, but that's what's worked for me in terms of how I've lived my life in terms of kids and, you know, working full time and all of the stuff that, you know, you and I have both done and the decisions we've made.
You know, you said that we get asked, and I've been asked this at a number of speaking events. You said, if there was one thing you could tell your younger self, what would it be? And I think, honestly, this is that thing for me. It's who you spend time with and how you allocate your time, who you give your time to, matters a lot. I realize that if you can spend time with people who are positive, excited, ambitious, want to talk about ideas as opposed to talking about, I don't know, people or TV or, you know, they really want to talk about bigger ideas. Because I think that is the key. Like for me, the happiest moments of my journey in my career have been the feeling that I am with a group of people and doing something that is bigger and more important than just myself. And I like being around those people. I feel like we're working hard together and we're doing hard things. And I look back and go, wow, look at what we accomplished. That's the biggest amazing reward for me.
I mean, and what's interesting is that starts even from when you're a kid, right? Whether you're on teams or whether you're in band or if you're whatever it is that you do, and knowing that together you're building something, and then it goes on throughout your career as well. Why are we doing this? Why did we create Masterstroke to begin with? We were talking about our childhoods a little bit and our growing up. And, you know, one of the things that at least I think many of us didn't have growing up was someone that we can see out there who's been there, done that, become a CEO as a woman, someone who has experienced some of these struggles, some of these failures, and how they've picked themselves up. We didn't really have a lot of that kind of mentorship growing up. And things are changing now. You know, you see a lot more women, you see a lot more minorities, a lot more women of color, you know, getting the opportunities and taking those challenges on. And now, you know, you and I have gone through lessons of business for the last 30 years. And it's important in my mind to be able to have to give back to, you know, people who are looking at these, looking at their future, looking at their careers and thinking about, well, I want to see people who have done it, who look like me, who think like me, who are me. Or I want to look at, you know, how did they handle this struggle? Because sometimes, you know, if you're having trouble getting out of bed or picking yourself up off the floor, if you could just remember a little bit that, hey, I'm not the only one dealing with this. You know, there are lots of other people have done it. And guess what? They've moved on and they've been successful.
I'm just doing it for me, by the way, just my own.
What about you?
No, actually, I mean, I think a big part of it is pay it forward. I absolutely know that I did not get here alone and that there were so many people who inspired me, advised me, guided me along the way. So I absolutely want to pay it forward to anybody who can take any inspiration from the things we talk about. But to be honest, I sold the company in February of this year, and I have spent the last 6 months kind of reflecting and, you know, with a little bit of space and calmness, being able to kind of process the journey that I was on. And I'm looking forward to doing that with you and sort of getting real about what that journey really was and what did I really learn. I think it's going to be, I hope, a benefit to other people, but I think it's going to be a benefit to me as well. Just kind of making sure that I'm kind of fully processing and understanding what I went through. And that's a big part of it. So I think these kind of real stories are very motivating for me to kind of share with you and share with our listeners. All right. Well, until next time, thank you all for joining us. I'm Monica Enand.
And I'm Sejal Pietrzak. And thank you to our executive producer, Georgiana Moreland.